Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Anyway, let me get some business out of the way. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, radio.com, sports station, John Dickinson, Jim Cozumel with you. The Bumgarner question is going to be laying there for the next 11 days. And if you don't like the conversation, get used to it, because it's going to keep on rolling, at least until 49er camp opens up. A week from today?
A week from right now.
Right now. A week from right now.
Right now, 10 o'clock, they'll be on the field.
Oh, and we're going to be talking about it.
Yes, we will.
We will be here next week talking about them getting the taking the field. And
how does Jimmy Garoppolo look as he jogs out to the practice field to stretch?
Does it seem like he's limping? Let's go to our... Will we have anyone there?
We probably will not.
Okay. That's a tough break for us.
It would be me, but I'm going to be here with you.
Maybe we could get somebody to go.
Yeah.
No? We don't...
I'm kidding.
We will find out. We will talk to somebody. Maybe we will talk to who's the guy we're talking to? Rob Lauder a little bit later on. Maybe we'll call Rob Lauder and say, hey, what's Jimmy G's gait like as he's running onto the field? Does he have a slight limp? Is he wearing a brace or not? Those are the deep questions that we need to know on day one.
Yeah.
I think they're gonna be a fun team to watch this year.
They better be.
I think they could be.
They better be. We're gonna get into that later, too. But
that's a good point.
They better be.
They better be is right. We will get into that a little. I was going to give you my hot take, but I'm going to save that hot take. We'll finish up our Giants conversation with this. They won 8 of their last 9. You said 14 of 16?
Yeah, they are 13-2 in July, 14-2 if you go back and add June 30th to that. They're 27-15 since June 1st. And they're 500 for the first time this season and the first time since August 31st of 2018. So that was the day they traded Andrew McCutchen. So they were a 500 team last year with McCutchen, and then they traded Andrew McCutchen, who was actually low-key their best player last year, even though he wasn't great. And
right.
Then they went 25 at the end of the year.
Yep.
Something god-awful.
That was not good.
It was not good. But McCutchen, I don't think people realized that McCutchen was their best player last year, and then you took him away, and they became the worst team in baseball.
Unwatchable at some points. Unwatchable.
Like the worst team in baseball.
Let me turn this whole equation around then. As we talk about, and we haven't even mentioned much of Will Smith, that's also part of the package that could be going somewhere, and we'll talk to John Morosi at 20 minutes past the hour at 10 o'clock from MLB Network. What are the chances the Giants are small buyers? Small buyers.
I think they could make some lateral type moves.
In which they get something or things, and what would it be? Would it be another arm? Would it be another outfield bat? I mean, you've got,
outfield
Buster
bat,
and Vogt, you're good behind the plate.
Second base bat.
Okay. Outfield bat, second base bat. Because Panic, I don't know what's happened there, but he's not, what is he hitting, 234 or something like that?
Yeah.
He's just not the guy that I think everyone thought was going to rise up.
And a big part of the Giants' success has been Panic's played less. And Donovan Solano's played more. And it's not that he hasn't played, but he's just played less.
I put a Solano jersey on order with the Giants. I might be wearing after he went 4 for 5 the other day.
And Solano's taken a couple of games. And Brandon Crawford's been terrific lately. Solano's taken a few games from Brandon Crawford here and there.
But that might help Brandon Crawford.
Definitely.
Right?
Well, this gets back to, I'm going to get off on another little mini tangent
That's
here.
That's fine with me.
But this gets back to what really has been the Giants' problem the last few years, even at the end of the championship years, 14, 15, on into 16, was the Giants, organizationally, they had a false belief that the Buster Posey's, and to a greater extent, the Brandon Belts and the Brandon Crawfords and the Joe Panics, were carriers.
Right.
They viewed them as like stars, like guys where if you have them, you're good.
Right.
If you have Posey and Belt and Crawford and Panic, that right there, you're a 500 team right there. And the reality is they're like a 70-win team with those guys playing a ton.
And those guys were still young enough in their baseball lives that you thought, we're going to have this core of starting at 500 teams.
And that was the mistake. And, that core, not good.
It's not, but can't you see why they thought that way? Can't you? I mean, there was a point when Brandon Crawford was the best shortstop. Really?
Yeah.
I thought Crawford was the best shortstop for a window.
Yes.
Right?
Well, he was defensively, yes.
Okay. Offensively wasn't bad.
Offensively, he should be hitting probably seventh.
He is now.
And Joe Panik should probably be hitting eighth. Well, that's why this team's played better.
Yeah.
This team's played better because, and the names aren't brand names.
No.
But Alex Dickerson has performed like Bryce Harper for a month.
Yep.
Yep. Right? Like that's so that's, you know, and is that going to continue? Probably not. But they've found other players that have been better than those stock names that everybody's used to, and that's allowed those names to kind of be what they were during the championship years, which is real. I mean, Brandon Belt's leading off, for crying out loud. Like Brandon Belt, like if Brandon Belt, I mean, I've said this for years, but if Brandon Belt's hitting fourth, you stink.
Yeah.
And the Giants have seen that. When Brandon Belt is hit fourth, and Brandon Crawford's hit fifth, they stink. Like, that's just the reality. That's not a good baseball team.
You know, it's so interesting because I left 3 weeks ago. I went to Japan, went to a Tokyo Giants game. Fabulous experience. I come back, and Belt's in the leadoff spot. The other day, I'm doing pregame, and I'm like, what?
And it's goofy.
Oh, yeah.
But guess what? He's a better lead. You got a better chance to win if Brandon Belt's your leadoff hitter than if Brandon Belt's your cleanup hitter.
Now, here's my question to you. Is that Bruce Bochy figuring it out? Or is that Farhan Zaidi and the laboratory of guys he's got up there on the fifth floor, which it's my understanding they've taken one whole wing and it's nothing more than analytics people sending that down.
Yeah. It looks like me. iPad, computer, couple of phones.
You have got one, two, three, four. You've got five screens in front of you unless I'm missing one.
No, it's actually three, four. It's actually six.
You have six screens in front of you.
And I'm just like numbers and it's just,
I could see guys in the trading desk over on Wall Street maybe. But
I'm playing all these games in my head.
You are.
And I'm
and
on the computer.
But
I'm playing every game between now and the end of the year on the computers.
To me, that's an interesting question. Is the Brandon Belt to lead off?
It's part of it.
Is that coming from the fifth floor, the analytics department? You know?
Bochy was asked about it, and he said, no, it's just something I was thinking about.
All right. Okay.
But I think
fine.
He was asked about it before it was working. So it was kind of, he was being asked about it with the tone of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Brandon Belt's leading off. Is this, like, this?
Does this come down from
up that idea?
Yeah, I know.
That didn't seem like a Bruce Bochy idea. And Bochy was like, oh, something we talked about. I thought it'd be a good idea. I actually think low key Bruce Bochy knows Brandon Belt's not a carrier. He's known it for five.
I think Bruce Bochy
likes Brandon Belt.
Yes.
I think he...
Do you go back to Sabian, you think those guys over-liked him? They liked him a little more than you should have?
Well, I think they got caught in what they believed he was and what the analytics... Because the analytics guys love Brandon Belt.
Yeah.
But I think they got caught in, boy, if we trade this guy somewhere, he's probably going to be a lot better in that... You know, we trade this guy to Cincinnati. He's going
to
be a 35 home run hitter, and we're going
to
look bad.
Yeah,
and we don't want to do that. We trade this guy somewhere to where he's in a great lineup, and we trade this guy to Boston or the Yankees or the Astros. This guy's going to be a stud hitting sixth, or hitting second, and because they've got again, those other teams have actual carriers in their lineup that the Giants don't have. So I actually think the Giants know what Belt and Crawford are. And have always known it, and they appreciate them for what they brought, but they got caught in this, the numbers kind of saying that maybe they should be a little better. So I actually don't think it was totally emotion. I think there was a numbers aspect of it that actually kind of bit that previous regime.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough.
Brandon Belt, the numbers say he should be better.
And it's my understanding that, you know, everyone talks about the new way of baseball. It's my understanding the Giants had... Teams are using analytics. The Sabian Giants had their version of analytics.
Definitely.
So let's not say that they were nothing but
that's kind of what I mean. And Bobby Evans was a guy that was...
Yeah.
He was an analytics guy a lot more than people think.
I'm pro him, but he was also willing to go after, spend some money to keep the team relevant, he was more willing to do that with the Cueto, the Samardzija.
Yeah.
With the they came close to Greinke. With the Longoria. I think we can get Longoria in this lineup, and I think he becomes the old Longoria.
And he's another guy, unfortunately, a guy on another team that wasn't a carrier anymore. So the evaluation was in line, you know, McCutchen, not a carrier anymore.
Right.
But a nice player. If you actually had two carriers and the rest of those guys, you actually could be a good team.
Right.
They just never got the big boys in the heart of the lineup.
So here's my question. The ultimate question then isn't just, are you trading Bumgarner and Will Smith to a lesser extent? Do you have to be in an either or? That when you're August 1st in Philadelphia, at the end of your trip, getting ready to go to Colorado, is it either not only are Bumgarner and Smith still on your roster, but you've added something, or both guys and maybe more are gone? You can't go into August 1st with the same guys in the clubhouse that you had on July 31st. You've got to make an indication. I'm going for it.
One or the other.
Or we've picked our lane and we're going to continue to do what we said we were going to do.
Right now, today,
Giants
are .500 team.
Okay. Two games out of the wild card.
Got two games out of the wild card. You got two with the Mets. You got three with the Cub. You got three with the Padres. Okay? Five games. What, six games right there? Wait, eight games.
Eight games right there.
Jeez.
Yeah. That's okay.
I'm terrible.
But you're right with five if you said two with the Mets and three with the Cubs.
You got eight games there.
Yeah.
That was really bad.
That's okay.
Jesus. You got eight games there. Let's say you go 4-4. You go
I'm
4-4.
Still 500.
You're three back.
Okay.
What do you do?
Wow.
But you've cooled from 13-2 because now you're 4-4.
You have, yeah. You have so cooled from. And you're going to cool from 13-2.
Right.
Like starting today, they're not going to win 13 of their next 15.
No. And what the majority of good teams do is they play 4-4, 8-8 for a couple weeks, and then they go 8-2 again.
Yeah.
And that's how you start to put it. But let's just say 4-4, 500, three and a half out. What do you do?
I've got my answer when we continue with John Morosi. He comes on next. We continue with some baseball a little bit later on into the 49ers. Are you all in on Jimmy G? If so, what makes you think that? That's coming up with John Dickinson and Jim Cozumel on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, some fun jams. Rocking you on a Saturday. John Dickinson, Jim Cozumel with you until 1 o'clock. Who comes on at 1? Is it Herbs or is it Tittle? Who do we got today? Who?
Yeah.
Oh, Rick the Stick. He's got some baseball stuff to go over, I'm sure. He's a smart guy. I like listening to him.
He's sharp. Witty. Clever.
To see if I can follow him. He's going off in a direction. Can I follow him? It's like a brain teaser.
Those first 10, 12 minutes.
Yeah, they are.
Are great.
They are. They are really good. I don't know if he scripts them or if it's all ad lib.
No, it's
really?
That's
off the top of his
that's
dome.
That's all in his dome.
I've only worked one show with Rick Tittle.
Really?
Yeah, I've only worked one show, but it was a fascinating show. Cuz he's probably the smartest guy on staff. Fortenbaugh's pretty smart guy too.
Yeah.
I'd guess those guys are probably the smartest guys on staff.
That's
fair. I've worked with both. They're interesting cats to work with, man. In a good way.
Yes.
In a good way. Challenging, no question about that.
I've done a lot of shows with Rick, especially in the early era.
In the early era?
Yeah.
Early on in 95.7's life?
Like we did some hot. We were like the holiday guys.
That's not bad.
Yeah, Christmas? Yeah.
Sure, I'm in.
JD and Rick.
Yeah.
Rick and JD. There was actually another name that was come up with that we can't say on the air for that show.
Well, goodness gracious.
You can insert your own joke here.
I won't. Let's get it back on the tracks. We're going to get to John Morosi in just a couple of minutes here. Giants and Mets will play today. You asked about what do you do. Give me the scenario again in the next eight games. Give me a scenario.
Yeah, you go 4-4. Okay. Next eight. You're 49-49 right now. Mm-hmm. Next eight games, two with the Met, three with the Cub, three with the Padre. You go 4-4. So you're 53-53. You're three and a half out.
Okay.
What do you do?
you're going to, and because I'm on this high, this Giants high, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Because I'm on a Giants high, I don't want to cut it off because I am. And it started when I went to see the Tokyo Giants on July 4th.
Right.
Yeah. I was back in my Giants, you know, sure. Jag. I come back. They're smoking hot. I'm thinking this is going to be fun. We're having good times. But if they make the wild card, JD, it's most likely as the visiting team.
Yeah.
And the wild card series is how many total games?
One. Yeah, one.
So, I got to tell you, I'm selling. I'm not going to turn my club upside down. I'm not going to change what I was thinking of doing for one guy or two guys, Will Smith being the other, in the hopes of getting one extra game. Because that's all it is. You're promised one game if you make it to the wild card.
But boy, that's a game that you'd feel pretty good about if
You had number 40
pitching
on the bump. You would.
He's won that game twice.
And there's no way you bet against him. I give you $1,000 and say you've got to bet on Giants versus Cardinals in St. Louis, one game wild card. You're putting all grand on number 40, aren't you?
Yeah.
I know I would.
The Giants have won that game twice because of Madison Bumgarner putting up zeros.
Once in Pittsburgh, I believe?
Once in Pittsburgh.
What was the second one? Was the second one against St. Louis?
The Mets.
The Mets? Oh,
it
yeah, that's
him
right.
And Syndergaard.
That's
0-0
right.
To the ninth.
That's right. Oh, my God.
0-0 to the ninth.
But I'm telling you, if I'm not, I'm selling right now. If you the scenario you give me, 4-4 over the next 8 games, I'm 3 games back a week later. Now I'm coming close to the end of July, and I'm 3 out of the wild card with all those teams in it. I'm not changing what I said. If I'm Farhan Zaidi, I am playing this down to the final minute on the 31st, and I'm getting the most I can for Madison Bumgarner and for Will Smith. I'm making the deal. One game doesn't. You promising me one game isn't enough.
They're if it stays as is 500, which would be a cool down from the 13-2. They're dealing.
All righty,
they're dealing.
John Morosi.
If
it stays as is, they're dealing. And again, the question becomes just how much do you get back for a guy who becomes a free agent? He's not under control. You wonder if you can. Are there enough teams out there in a hunt? You know, it's in fact, we're going to get to when we get to John Paul Morosi. He wrote about a couple of teams who had scouts at the game the other day. Who's taking a look at the Giants? Who's taking a look at who's who's someone who might be wanted by another team? We'll find out from him who some of those teams are. We'll find out just what direction the Giants might be thinking.
By the way, just real quickly, Madison Bumgarner, 2014.
Yeah.
Wild card game, 10 strikeouts, 1 walk, shutout.
Not bad.
Shutout, 2014.
But that was 2014.
2016 wild card game against the Mets. Shutout.
Yeah.
9.
That changes. That might make me think a little harder.
He went 9 in both games.
That's amazing. All right, I'm Jim Cozumel, John Dickinson across the seat from me. Time now to get to our guest, and he's a great one. Great friend of 95.7 The Game, John Morosi, host and columnist over at MLB.com. You see him on MLB Network. You see him on the NHL Network because he's a big hockey fan. So we got a lot of stuff to get into when it comes to the San Francisco Giants. John, happy Saturday to you. I hope things are going well for you today, sir.
Thanks, Jim. And John, hope you guys are doing great as well. I know it's a busy weekend across the baseball world. Certainly big doings in Cooperstown, so my congratulations goes to all those being honored there, including, of course, our colleague Jason Stark in the baseball writing world today. So a very special weekend there in Cooperstown, and thanks as always for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
By the way, I'm glad you mentioned Jason Stark. He is a great guy, but he's done great, great things in the media world. I'm glad you brought him up because everyone's going to talk about Rivera and Halliday and Martinez and Messina, but I'm glad you brought up a colleague of yours. That's very, very nice of you to do, John.
Well, thanks. And you know, Jason's a friend of mine. I'm lucky to call him a friend and someone who I've always thought, and Ken Rosenthal wrote about this as well at The Athletic here this week, about just what a great enthusiasm Jason has for the game, how he perceives it, the nuances that only he seems to be aware of. It's so unique the way he looks at the game, and we're very, very lucky to call him a friend and certainly a colleague, and I think we've all learned a lot about the game through reading his coverage over the years.
Congratulations to him and everyone else. All right, John, let's get into what's going on with the San Francisco Giants. They've won 14 of their last 16. How, if at all, has this run altered the way Farhan Zaidi is looking at how he is going to maneuver as we get closer to the trade deadline?
Well, I think it has changed things a little bit, Jim and John. I think there's been a little bit of a shift. I still think the overwhelming likelihood is that the Giants will move at least one reliever. I'd be surprised if that doesn't happen. There is such a great need across the industry for relief pitching, and the Giants are so good in that area that I think you can make that move without sacrificing your chance to make it to the wild card at least. And I think one useful example along these lines would be a couple years ago, the Twins were buyers around about this time of year. They actually acquired Jaime Garcia, and then a week later they had lost, I believe, all but one game in that week, and then they traded him to the Yankees. So they went from buy to sell in a matter of days, and they still reached the wild card game. So it's not so much an either-or binary thing necessarily when you are in a position like the Giants. And they're not alone in being in the middle ground a little bit. Of course, they're two games out of the second wild card now. But they've got to pass four teams to get into a wild card spot. And understanding that a lot of those teams will play each other, of course, in the very same division, you look at the Cardinals and Brewers are both teams that they've got to pass. They've got to find a way to pass the Diamondbacks as well. And they, by the way, are somewhat in a sell mode as it relates to Robbie Ray. So a lot of different competing ideas here. I still think, though, the Giants could sell pieces without selling Bumgarner and still potentially find a way to make it to the wild card game.
Now, John, if the Giants do sell a bullpen piece, how likely in your mind is it that that piece is Will Smith, or is there added value to keep Smith just because he's been so good, although he has struggled a little bit in the last week?
Right. I think if they sell a bullpen piece, Smith is most likely the one. You look at that and consider where he is at. Of course, his contract is up at the end of the year. They do have internal options to close without him. Sam Dyson would be one, most notably, that would be able to close for them this year and then next year as well, based on his contract. I think Watson would be another possibility to move just because he's a rental. But with Dyson and his versatility, I believe he can still close. He certainly still has closer stuff. Things just didn't go well for him at the end there in Texas, but I still think that doesn't really take him away and have him not be a closer any longer. So he's been able to find it back with the Giants, do quite well there. So if you trade Smith, I think you very easily promote Dyson or even Maranta, if you had to, into a higher leverage situation. And really, you got to look at it this way. And there's always this cost-benefit analysis that goes on with a team like this. If you've got a chance to get a top-five prospect in someone's system, and you can do it by trading 15 to 20 innings of Will Smith, which is probably what you'd be talking about over the last couple months of the season, is 15 to 20 innings of a reliever worth giving that up to bring in someone that can impact your club as potentially an everyday player for the next 6 years? And I think that there's much more impact in the latter category when you look at it objectively. And especially with a reliever, if you're confident in what you've got, even at AAA, and someone made this point to me yesterday, then you just move up your best reliever from AAA and maybe reconfigure your relief pitching roles a little bit, especially when you've got someone that you trust like Dyson. I think with Bumgarner, it's a different category because he is so unique. He is a legend and an icon of the organization, and he is someone that you would look to and say, you know what, if we get some good outings from him down the stretch, we've got a shot at making some noise here in the wild card because of the way they've played here of late. So I do look at Smith and Bumgarner as being fundamentally different pitchers, especially because, as we talked about, you could envision Smith going to a team like the Dodgers. I could not imagine Bumgarner in Dodger blue.
John, what's your sense of what the Giants are looking for in terms of a return? Just, and I don't mean necessarily specific players, but just positionally and what level of talent? Are they looking for younger guys to put with like a Joey Bart? Or are they looking with guys that are major league ready? How are they sort of evaluating what they need?
It's a great question. I think they're probably ranging from the double A level on up, just based on their overall expectation of competing and when they will need those reinforcements. If you trade, I think really interestingly, the way that the outfield has matured for them here in recent days, and maybe enough that you're going to contemplate having someone like a Dickerson or a Yastrzemski around the club next year. If we were talking 2 months ago, I would have said, well, they've got to find a way to get an outfielder. That's a mandatory thing. They've been lacking production out there. But now that they've played a little bit better out there in the outfield, I think you can be a little more flexible and opportunistic. And for me, you look at Bumgarner and what he could bring back. I think no matter what, whether it's Smith or Bumgarner, you probably have to find a way to get at least one higher-level starting pitcher who you would imagine slotting into the rotation, if not this year, then certainly next year. I think they were hoping certainly for more from Derek Rodriguez this year than what they've gotten. And you start to think about how the rotation looks in 2020, because even if you keep Bumgarner for now, there's no evidence that the Giants are any closer to signing him long-term than they were before the season began. And really, it doesn't seem to me that under the Bobby Evans and Sabian regimes or the current one that they've really ever become all that close to signing Bumgarner long-term. It doesn't seem to me that's really ever been something that's been within reach. Now, there's nothing to say that can't happen in the wintertime, but you've got to consider the state of your rotation for 2020 and beyond without banking on Bumgarner because he's a free agent. And even Samardzija, of course, is winding down his contract as well here in the next couple of years. So it's a difficult depth chart to imagine. And you mentioned, of course, having Joey Bart. It's a great piece to have there. I think they've got to find a way to get one more or maybe two more high-end quality starting pitchers. And I think that by moving Smith and by moving Bumgarner, you could certainly achieve those objectives.
John Morosi, MLB.com, MLB Network, joining us 95.7 The Game. I'm trying to figure out the best way to form this question, and it has to do with Bumgarner and a trade, but I look at what happened to Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell in the offseason and how, you know, they sat there for a while and sat there and sat there. If the Giants keep Bumgarner, are they endangering his potential income? Because do you see a team, don't you think teams are going to be afraid to give up that compensatory pick again?
Well, that's an excellent point, and that is a part of the market that is very real. We heard team after team say, you know, I like Keuchel, I like Kimbrel, but I can't give up the pick. And the current crop of GMs values that pick so much, so highly. And until the current system changes, which, of course, we've got through 2021, it's really hard to imagine the approach of front offices changing from what we have seen. So that's an excellent point that you make. Bumgarner may well, from a financial standpoint, he stands to benefit if he's traded. It's a fascinating dynamic. And that's where, interestingly, to take another level of this whole conversation, of course, he's got the limited no-trade clause, and he arranged the no-trade clause very cleverly to include teams that he believed would have interest in him and therefore would strategically require his permission to move there. And that's great, and that's a good way of approaching things as a pitcher. But do I really think he is going to say, oh, I'm not going to go to the Braves or I'm not going to go to the Brewers because you're not going to give me a $1 or $2 million trade assignment bonus, or I just simply don't want to go, I want to stay in San Francisco? Okay, but it's going to potentially cost you. I mean, when you think about Keuchel and Kimbrel, look at what they were offered versus what they ended up signing for. It could that decision, staying put, could cost you $10, $20 million. It's almost impossible to even know. So that's a pretty expensive couple months when you think about it. So it's a really unique set of circumstances, and it's an excellent point that you make because Bumgarner can't simply think about, well, where do I want to go and steer the conversation? Because to your point, he needs to be liberated from that pick, if at all possible. And the only way for that to happen is for him to be traded in the next 2 weeks, which makes this time of year so interesting, so fascinating, and so consequential for really months and years to come in the lives of these very highly coveted players.
John, I'm going to put you on the spot. Let's say the Giants go 4-4 in the next 8 games. They're 53-53, and they're 3.5 out of the second wild card. Two teams ahead of them actually would have to pass three teams to get into a slot. Are they sellers at that point, or are they sticking to it, or maybe doing a combination of both? And how much does Bruce Bochy in his final year play into that, if at all?
I think at that point, if they're at 500, that they would still be sellers, I believe. I go back, and this is the way that the Tigers ran it with David Price a number of years ago. I even think about the Nationals, that they moved a couple relievers last year at midseason, and they were in a very similar spot. Even the Pirates, when they traded Mark Melanson, they were in a very similar position to where the Giants are right now. I believe that Farhan Zaidi realizes the power of this moment. You're at a time when bullpen performance across the majors has been basically a 20-year low in terms of their effectiveness. So I believe we'll see the Giants become sellers if they're right at 500. And I believe if they're 500, that would still include trading Bumgarner. I think that for Bumgarner to stay, guys, they've got to go. They've got to win probably 75% of their remaining games to really make it so it would be almost untenable to trade Bumgarner at that point in time. So it's a fascinating story. I think it's a really unique dynamic of the deadline. But I believe that they would trade if they're right at 500. I still think they trade both Bumgarner and Smith. But by no means is it a given. I just think that right now, based on my sense of where they're at, that still things point toward dealing those players rather than not.
Before we let you go, this is a different trade deadline in Major League Baseball. No longer do they have August to do things. How busy will it be leading up to July 31st?
I think very busy. And I had an executive describe it to me the other day and telling me, he said, John, this is basically right now a coiled spring. It is ready to pop. It's ready to burst forth with a lot of action and energy, and I think that we're going to see that. I would look very carefully at Marcus Stroman. I think there's a good chance he is traded before his next scheduled start on Wednesday for the Blue Jays. He was very good last night, pitching before 8 different teams. They had scouts there, including the Yankees, that had 2. So there was a lot of activity there in Detroit last night for Stroman. I think he very likely could get traded in the coming days. And once that happens, once you have the first major name out there, then I think the action flows from there. I think maybe Bumgarner, they wait on that till the very last couple days. But one really unique part of the schedule that I think is a really important point to make here is that the deadline's on a Wednesday. And so I think we're going to see a lot of activity, if it hasn't happened by Sunday night. Sunday night, major action, because Monday is an off day for half of the teams, and Tuesday is really the last full day before the Wednesday afternoon deadline. And so to me, as an executive, if you don't know where you stand by Sunday night, I kind of think shame on you. You should probably know by then, because that last game, is it really going to push you one way or the other? So especially with all those off days on Monday for a lot of teams, you got to know by Sunday night. So I think Sunday night will be the deadline before the deadline. You're going to see a lot of really intense action there. And I do believe we're going to have one of the very busiest trade deadlines I have ever seen in all my years covering baseball. So my friends, my motto is, we're going to sleep in August. as Pavarotti has sung, Nessun Dorma, no one sleeps until August.
Man, that is going to be awesome. I hope MLB Network has a whole channel. The whole channel's going crazy on that Sunday and then again on that Wednesday, and they have you guys all over the place figuring out what the next move is going to be. John, you're always a great friend here to us at 95.7 The Game. Enjoy your weekend.
Well, listen, we show up to August, and I'm like, wait a minute, football starts soon. Yeah. So it's a great time of year, I know, for you guys as well.
Yep.
You guys do a great show, and thanks for having me on the air today. I appreciate it very much.
Always a pleasure, John. Have a great weekend.
You have it.
John Morosi, MLB Network, MLB.com. His friend Jason Stark going into the Hall of Fame, into the media wing. Guys going into the Hall of Fame this weekend. excuse me. Mariano Rivera.
No-brainer.
No-brainer, right? No-brainer. Roy Halladay.
No-brainer.
Edgar Martinez.
No-brainer.
No-brainer?
In my mind.
Okay. Mike Mussina.
Yeah. No brainer.
Pop gun fizzle.
No brainer. Yeah, probably. I guess.
So Rivera, sure. you go Yankees. Halliday, what do you do? Phillies or Blue Jays?
Boy, I don't know.
Edgar Martinez, Mariners.
Yeah.
Mussina?
Edgar Martinez should just wear a hat that says DH.
You're right. He's loved in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't they name a restaurant or a bar in the ballpark?
Yeah, Edgar's.
There you go.
Yeah. Something. Yeah.
Mike Mussina, Yankee or Oriole?
Stanford.
Wow, look at you. Yeah, that's neat. All right, let's chew on some of what John just had to say.
Yeah.
Some interesting stuff there. First of all, now I can't wait for the Sunday before.
Well, yeah, that's why I didn't even throw that Tuesday game in. Like, games, and I had the math all wrong. It's eight games. It's the next two against the Met. It's the three against the Cub. Yep. It's your three-game weekend set at San Diego. And then it's time to decide, because the Giants are one of those teams that has that Monday off.
I mean, you are looking at, they've got the Monday the 29th is off. Then they'll play Philly on the 30th. They'll play him again on the 31st. But you're going to start to look at Sunday night into Monday. That's when it's going to start to, according to John Morosi, get a little bit hectic out there. And I like that. I want there to be, I don't know if I want there to be a feeding frenzy. You know what? I want the Giants involved. In fact, if we go to August 1st, Giants, Phillies in Philadelphia, and there hasn't been a move made, aren't you just going to sit back and going to go, One way or another, whether you're buying to help your team or...
I think a lot of people would feel that way. I would hold off just to see where are they at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is just... There's a curiosity aspect for me just as to what if they go 6-2 or 7-1 in the next eight?
Then
not likely. Not likely, but what if they do?
How likely is it Farhan Zaidi is sitting up there with a voodoo doll sticking pins into it trying not to win
not seven of eight? That's just bad. That's bad karma.
That is bad juju.
There. But again, if you're an analytics guy, you don't believe in any of that.
You don't. You have your plan. You have picked your lane. And you go down there. And that's why if you win 7
of
8...
What does the iPad tell me, Coase?
I will be honest with you, John. I think if they win 7 of 8...
The iPad tells you to keep it going.
See, I disagree.
Okay.
I think they've picked a lane. And it doesn't matter what their record is right now. If they were... Let's say they're going to be 50-50 after Sunday.
Yeah.
Because that's 100 games. And at 100 games, you should know what you have. Even though this team has made so many transactions.
And that's, win 3 out of 4 against the Mets. You split the next two. You're 50-50 tomorrow at 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Let's say that's going to be what it is. You know where you are. Even if they were 60-40, right? Same 100 games.
Right.
I still think they've picked their lane. I still think they move on from that. That's my belief. I could be way off. But I think if they're 60-40, they still have said, we know this is not sustainable, right? Does anyone think the team, I'm not saying they're going to win 14 of their next 16.
27-15 since June 1st.
Does anyone think they're going to go 27-15 over the next 32?
Since
42?
June,
is that 42?
Since, yeah, 42.
42.
Since June 1st, they are playing like a 100-win team.
Does anyone think that's sustainable?
And I say that.
I know. And
that's laughing, but it's a fact.
It's a fact. Does anyone think it's A, sustainable for the rest of this year, B, sustainable next year? They want to build a sustainable organization. They don't want to have to go out and get Samardzija and Cueto, the version of those two guys, to keep it alive, right? They don't want to give it a jolt.
They will not do that.
No. They want a sustainable organization. And the only way you get to where the Houston Astros are, sustainable organization, where you have your core guys, and then you add a flame-throwing righty who comes in and wins you a bunch of games in a World Series. Right? Is that fair enough?
Fair.
They want to build that, and the only way to get there is to stick to your plan and move your guys. Move the guys you can to get what you can when you can. Because I don't think they're sustainable right now.
Even if they go 7-1.
Even if they go 7-1.
Because I could say 6-2. All right, that puts you 55-51.
Still pretty good, 55-51.
55-51 would likely put you within a game, I would say. of the wild card, half game, game. Might even put you in it. Might put you in a tie, something like that.
Did Morosi say the Diamondbacks are in sell
mode? Yeah, he did, which is interesting because if you look at the Diamondbacks, they are a game up on the Giants.
Yep.
They've won 7 of their last 10, and the Diamondbacks actually have a plus 71 run differential.
Oh my gosh.
They have the best run. The Diamondbacks have the best run differential in the National League.
What?
Yes. Among the wild card teams.
Okay, among the wild card teams. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Still, that's still pretty darn good.
And it's actually the second best in the entire National League.
And you're
it's Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Cubs.
Wow.
Braves, Nats, and then the outlaw.
Would you sell? They're selling Greinke because they want to get out from under that contract.
And Robbie Ray. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Diamondbacks are terrible. They're not good at home. They're better on the road. That's a weird one. Their record, you know, based on run differential, their record, the expected one loss, you know, they should be 56-42.
When we continue, we're going to get back into the Giants later on. We're here until 1 o'clock, so we got a lot of time to go over all this stuff. When we continue, are you all in on Jimmy G? And if you are, what makes you all in? Build your case. I can build a case for it. I want to be all in. We're going to get some 49ers conversation when we continue. A little bit of Warriors later on today. John Dickinson, Jim Cosimo with you on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Welcome into a Saturday morning at 95.7 The Game. Jim Cosimore and John Dickinson with you all the way until 1 o'clock. Rick Tittle takes over at that point. A lot of Giants conversation, thanks to John Morosi. He joined us in the 10 o'clock hour. We shift gears to the National Football League. A week from right now, the 49ers will be at camp. I wish they were at camp in either Stockton or Sacramento, but they insist on staying in Santa Clara, JD, which I guess is easier on you. You would if they ever did decide to move it.
Actually, depending upon the time of day, it might be easier and faster to drive to Rockland than it is to drive to Santa Clara.
That's a good call. You know what? You actually make some sense there. You are true. I know where you
especially
live.
Especially coming from
where we're coming from. Yeah, you're absolutely right, come to think of it. But the Niners get rolling in a week from today. And I personally think there is not muted optimism, but I think there is a greater optimism heading into this year. Year 3 for Shanahan Lynch. They've got their quarterback healthy, they think.
It's basically a redo of last year, only with
more talent.
You think better players.
Yeah, you think better players, and you hope the Kittles of the world can maintain it, and you hope the Solomon Thomases of the world can maybe achieve some of what you had hoped. He's had a horrible off-the-field situation.
Definitely.
So I completely give him a pass. And I was originally kind of tough on him. Then you hear the backstory,
and
you realize, you know what? That's the guy gets a free pass. He gets to start right now. With all that said, I'm of the belief, if all goes well, the 49ers can be what the Rams were 2 years ago and what the Bears were last year. They can be the team that sneaks up on you. You're not ready for them. The next thing you know, they're at 10 wins. And they could be something to, if the Bears don't miss a field goal in the first playoff game, I can make an argument they're a Super Bowl team because of their defense.
Yeah.
I think the 49ers can be the surprise team of the NFC. Am I getting out over my skis?
Maybe a little bit.
Okay.
Although I do think that's within reason. I was optimistic last year based on the way Jimmy Garoppolo finished the season. Based on the fact that they were able to go 5-0 with him as the starter, and he played well, and he was extremely poised in big moments down the stretch of games, and helped them win, and that was a pretty god awful football team at the end of 2017 that he took to 5-0, and I know there were extenuating circumstances, teams sat guys at the end of the year, they weren't playing great teams. I know he lit up Jacksonville, Tennessee was a pretty good team among the wins that they had. I was optimistic going into last year. I look, even with more talent, and I do agree that there's more talent on this 49ers team this year compared to last year. He's got to prove it. They've got to prove it this year. I thought 9-7 was a possibility last year, 10-6.
You talked about that. Yes, we did.
I think maybe the day training camp started last year.
Yes.
And I think we also mocked the Bears the day the training camp started last year.
Oh, no question about it.
They got no shot. They're one of two teams that's got no shot.
Yep.
And you're right. They were a terrific football team with a great defense. Jimmy Garoppolo's got to prove it to me because he's got to prove, one, he could stay on the field, and he's got to prove to me that he could play at a higher level than he did in the three games that he played last year, where he was okay against Minnesota. He was a non-factor against Kansas City until they got down 30 points.
Right. And again, then, in the Lion game.
In the Lion game, he was pretty good, but he threw
what should have been
a game-losing pick.
Exactly.
And it was a Tony Romo, Brett Favre, what the bleep is the guy doing kind of a pick. And if that pick had stood and the 49ers were 0-3 at the point where he got hurt, his 2018 would have been an absolute disaster, and we would look completely differently at how we feel about this 49ers team coming into 2019. So the long-winded answer, they got to prove it to me. He's got to prove it to me. I am less optimistic going into this year than I was even last year.
Wow, that's interesting. Less optimistic this year than you were going into last year. And the question for a 49er fan is, are you bought in on your quarterback? We all talk about Jimmy Garoppolo like it's a constant. Oh, yeah, if he's healthy, this is going to happen. What is the this that you're expecting? And have you bought in? If so, build the case for me. You can do it on the Chilton Autobody text line at 95795, or you can hit us up on the phone line, 888-957-9570. I'm bought in because why? Because he's appeared in 26 total games as a quarterback? Because he played for Bill Belichick and learned under Tom Brady? Because the 5-0 season when he had a healthier team around him back in 2017, that 5-0 run made me a believer in what he can do if everything's together. He's had 10 starts in his career. He's 8-2 in those starts. If you've bought in, is it because of the weapons they've put around him? Will Kittle be even more of a factor because Garoppolo is there? I will tell you that maybe the biggest question mark is the quarterback position on this team. They might be stronger in a bunch of other areas, defensively especially.
Stronger than they've been, for sure.
Yes.
On paper.
Maybe the, and I get the impression, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm getting the impression, JD, that people think the quarterback position, if Garoppolo's healthy, is a constant. They're never going to have to worry about it because Garoppolo is there. I'm not sure I'm there.
Yeah, you ask what people look at, and to me it is the 8-2. It's the 6-2 with the 49ers. It's the 5-0 again at the end of 2017. It was the ability for the 49ers to play complementary football when he was the quarterback. Their defense looked better when he was the quarterback just because they were able to move the chains a little bit with him as the quarterback. They looked like a real football team with him as the quarterback in terms of how they functioned. So I think that's what, that coupled with he's going to have more weapons, better weapons than he had previously, and the fact that they've added some talent on the defensive side in terms of pass rushing, in terms of linebacker play. Secondary to me is still very iffy, but they believe that they're going to get to the quarterback at a higher rate to where they'll be able to withstand and coach up some young secondary guys.
Part of the reason that I say I think the 49ers can be the Rams of 2 years ago, the Bears of last year, is the head coach quarterback dynamic. And in one fell swoop, I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure I'm sold on him, but I haven't tossed him out either. I think Garoppolo certainly has the skills. I mean, he showed that he's got the skills. He's going to have another offseason with the same guy, Shanahan, who's a heck of a smart offensive mind. Just go to McVay and Goff down with the Rams a couple of years ago. One guy, McVay, turned Jared Goff's career around a couple of years ago. He didn't expose him to the bad throws. He worked within a system. He put him in a position to succeed. The same way I think the 49ers can be the Bears of last year. Smart offensive-minded coach who didn't allow his quarterback to be put in tough situations. I think Mitchell Trubisky was much better when they confined him, and he's a better runner, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think they ask him to win games. Do they? They ask him not to lose games.
They don't ask him to win.
He
still lost a couple on his own.
Yeah, he did. And he missed a couple with injury.
I just go back to that. And this is minutia. I just go back to that Miami game where he just, interception in the end zone. I mean, just.
Yeah.
He's not good. You can't win with him. Like, you cannot win a Super Bowl with
they
him.
They think they're going to the Super Bowl this year in Chicago. I'm just letting you know this. So they think their team is built to go to the Super Bowl. So
you're
saying that guy's not going to do it. But anyway, they did have an incredible jump up. Double-digit wins last year.
Their head coach also gets a little cute, too, from time to time.
Very. Very.
And
sometimes two.
And sometimes it's cute, and it's like, wow, that was awesome.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's cute, and it's like, why'd you do that?
Yeah. Sometimes it's a hot mess. You know what it is? It's a 7-on-7 high school game is what he's doing, right? Sometimes.
Right.
But then sometimes it is overly cute. But again,
I think Garoppolo's got to be better than Trubisky.
Okay.
Like, hands down. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo has to walk on the field week one and be better than Mitch Trubisky.
How about better than Jared Goff?
We'll see. Goff's done a few things in his career now.
The last couple of years, but I think a lot of that has to do with McVay putting him in those spots.
Absolutely.
Can't I imagine Shanahan and Garoppolo working, you know, hand in hand together and having another offseason to work together so that they do have the increase? That was a big jump the Bears took from being a whiz-poor team for 5 years.
Yes.
It took you 2 years to combine wins to get to double digits, sometimes 3 years, I think, to get to double digits, it feels like, as opposed to last year's double digits.
Right.
Can't I dream of Shanahan, Garoppolo being whoever the Bears coach is, and Trubisky and whoever McVay and by the way, the Bears coach was singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game of the Cub game
nice.
The other day.
Nagy. Matt Nagy.
Matt Nagy.
Matt Nagy.
If we can get that and play that back, I'd like to play that back. I think he got some of the words. He might have gotten one of the words wrong. It was a wee bit tricky.
That happens.
Wee bit iffy. But do you buy my theory of Shanahan, brilliant offensive mind? Now he's got a couple of years of putting his guys together around him. He should be able to get more mileage out of this guy. Is it too much to say I want Garoppolo to be Matt Ryan? Because when they went to the Super Bowl, Matt Ryan was a hell of a quarterback.
He was an MVP.
He was an MVP quarterback, and a lot of it had to do with the guy who was helping him call plays.
That's probably too much. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's a certain set of 49er fans that believe, well, Jimmy Garoppolo is better than Matt Ryan. And that gets into this weird bigger picture issue that I have, and I've said this a couple of different times. At what point do we, the media and fans, start treating the 49ers under John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan? Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, probably a better way to put it.
Yes, it is.
Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. At what point do we start treating them like a franchise that hasn't done anything yet?
I think this year it turns.
Because they haven't done anything yet. And yet it just, there's this, the vibe and the feel and the,
we're in the right direction.
It's like you mentioned the Bears. People in Chicago thinking the Bears are going to the Super Bowl. Well, the Bears won their division last year, had a home playoff game, and probably should have won the game. Okay? 49ers haven't won 8 games in 5 years.
But I'll tell you this. Part of what's in their favor, the mess before them.
Yeah, but, okay.
And that still lingers, the stench.
And we're 3 years removed from that.
And then you add on the guy they were banking on hurt in game three.
Yeah.
And they get cut off at the knees. Now, I will argue back, you should have been prepared for that. You needed a better backup than what you had. If you thought you were ready to compete last year on some level, you should have a better backup.
Kyle Shanahan loved the backup. And then the backup played better than
exactly,
the backup.
Exactly.
And Shanahan got credit for that, but I still think Shanahan is more sold on the backup who he drafted.
In the third round.
Correct.
I like the backup to the backup. I like the backup.
Backup's fine. I like the backup to the backup more.
I like the backup to the backup
more. The backup.
More. Right. Exactly.
Not more than the
I'm getting a number 9 before I'm getting a number, is it 4? I forget what the backup was.
Well, CJ was 3, right?
3. I'm getting a number 9 before I'm getting a number 3. When I put my order, like I put in an order for a Donovan Solano jersey with the Giants. I've got my Solano jersey coming.
7. Is he 7?
I don't even know, but I put in an order, and I'm putting in an order for number 9, not number 3. That's how I view this. I'm not going to be like everyone else wearing a 10, okay? Because everyone else is going to go out there and run a 10. But, John, you know this. The stench of what came before them
Nick Mullins is four, by the way. Just it's
three. I'm buying a four, it's not three. Nine. Thank you. Buying a
we're
four, not a three.
For accuracy here.
Oh God, what an idiot! I'm an idiot. I'm getting a four instead of a three. The stench of what happened before Shanahan and Lynch got here. I think ownership giving them 6 years, unprecedented. I think the injury to the fair-haired boy also played in their favor. It didn't work against them. I think if Garoppolo stays, if Garoppolo stays last year and they go 6-10, now I think that there's a little bit of uproar out here, right? If Garoppolo isn't hurt, plays the whole year, there's 6-10, 7-9, you could see a jump up. 6-10, you'd probably have the natives would be getting restless at that point. Everyone would be a little unhappy. But I think they've been granted an extra year. Their year three is like a year two. Although to me, you got to be something this year.
It's go time.
It's go time.
Training wheels are off. There's no more excuses, even injury excuses.
Nope.
Because there's been a lot of injury excuses. There's
yep.
been a lot of, well, this guy can't, you know, hadn't been healthy, and this guy's got a calf, and this guy's got a knee, and this guy, you know, a lot of this guy's, you know, Jimmy Ward wakes up, he's got a shoulder, and then he's got a clavicle, and then he's got, like, Niners have a lot of guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're gonna have to be healthy, because health is no longer an excuse. Health is now something that you're going to be held accountable for.
You know, it's off the text line. 408 says prediction: Jimmy G plays six games before another injury.
Oh, that's not good. And again, that doesn't give you the excuse. Even if he's 5-1, that doesn't. You know, Jimmy G goes 4-2, 5-1, then misses five games. You go 1-4, then he comes back. You go 2-2. My math could be wrong on that. That might not add 16. Forgive me, but I'm rolling. Okay, forgive me, but. You don't get it, it all counts. And if Jimmy Garoppolo can't play enough for you to be good enough to be in the postseason, you get held accountable for that now. He gets held accountable for that. Kyle Shanahan gets held accountable for that. John Lynch gets held accountable for that. And I also think this is the first year, Coase. This is the first year where if it doesn't go well, we're going to start to hear more of the, well, this guy wanted this guy, and this guy forced this guy on this guy, and maybe these two aren't as in lockstep as we think, and who's really in charge, by the way, Kyle Shanahan.
It is Shanahan's, he's riding the ship.
Because you hear a lot of, well, John Lynch didn't do this, and John Lynch didn't do that.
That's incorrect in your assessment.
John Lynch is under Kyle Shanahan.
Yes.
So if you're holding one, because you get this a lot with the Niners. Well, Shanahan's a great, great offensive coach.
I just said it a minute ago.
And he is.
Yeah.
But Shanahan is the number one. He's the franchise.
He's the guy. He's the guy. He's the lead dog on
so
the sled.
So you get held, even if you've filtered some of that work to John Lynch, even if there are certain things he's responsible for, it's on you.
It's still on Shanahan.
And I don't care how well you can draw up a play.
He's Bill Walsh. He's Bill Walsh.
It's on you.
He gets the final call.
Guys get hurt on you.
Yep.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.